Good evening, opera lovers. Through the Opera Glass welcomes you to the first in our new summer opera series, presented, transcribed, and recorded to promote a better understanding of the classics in opera by culture-conscious Californians. We take you now to KECA's Bargain Basement Concert Hall of the Air and your host, Deems Anderson.
Good evening. From KECA's own citadel of culture, the Bargain Basement Concert Hall of the Air, we invite you to join us as we look through the opera glass at the romantic musical masterwork by Georges Bizet, his opera Carmen. This is Deems Anderson, noted musical authority, your host and annotator for this new summer opera series. As I look around me from my vantage point high in the cheap seats here in the third balcony, I should like to try to give you a little of the color and pageantry attending this glittering premiere. Culture lovers everywhere were overjoyed a few months ago to learn that the concert hall was reopening after being closed down for a year for non-payment of rent. The Diamond Horseshoe presents a dazzling spectacle this evening. Sharply reflected flashes of light from hundreds of diamond tiaras, solitaires, brooches, and necklaces, with here and there a chrome-plated hearing aid. Late arrivals are being shown to their seats. All of society and the social register have turned out for this performance. Immediately below us is the Zircon Horseshoe, for those who can't afford to sit in the Diamond Horseshoe. Ah, now the orchestra is beginning to tune up. Soon Arturo Spimoni, stormy petrel of the podium and world-renowned long hair, will come lurching in from the wings offstage to conduct the Union Scale Philharmonic in the Carmen Overture. I believe the audience has caught sight of the maestro now. Yes, they're applauding. Here he comes. They're giving him a rising ovation. Arturo bows. Now he gropes for the podium. Let's see if he makes it. Yes, he made it. Now a quiet is settling down over this great hall as Maestro Spimoni prepares to begin the performance. For a moment this evening, it looked as though we might be forced to begin without the services of the world-renowned poet of the podium. Arturo has been laboring untiringly for months in preparation for tonight's premiere. He had reached the point of near exhaustion just before curtain time and fainted backstage. However, they brought him two. And then they brought him two more, and were very gratified indeed to see that magnificent white head poring over the score up there on the raised dais. Can't see just what he's poring from here, but he has quite a head on him. And now there's the tapping of the stick for attention. Arturo Spimoni is poised, coattails akimbo. The house lights are dimming, opera lovers. We're waiting for the overture. Deems Anderson once again, music lovers. While the senile symphonettes hack away at the overture, I should like to take this opportunity to remind you of a special feature of this program, the Opera Round Table of the Air, scheduled at the conclusion of Act Two, during which time we shall present the world-renowned music critic, author, and lecturer, Dr. B. Monkhouse Smith. He will answer letters from you listeners and titillate your ears with comments based upon his vast storehouse of musical knowledge. Now, back to the overture. Arturo Spimoni and over half a hundred Transylvanians have just concluded the overture to Georges Bizet's romantic opera, Carmen, first in our new summer series. And now, while we await the first act curtain, let us review briefly our program notes. As every opera lover knows, Bizet, though bedridden with hangnails for years, nonetheless composed some of the most enduring musical masterworks of all time. In tonight's performance, Mary Matsos and Itzio Pincus will sing the principal roles. Miss Matsos, noted Ukrainian diva, will essay the title role of the gypsy queen Carmen. There have been many great Carmens in the history of opera. Among the most noteworthy have been Carmen Caballero, Carmen Miranda, and Carmen Lombardo, the last name being particularly outstanding. His lush tremolo interpretation of the role at La Scala in 1926 made operatic history. The role of Don Jose, the young soldier who is in love with Carmen, will be sung by Itzio Pincus, celebrated Lapland bravura basso. The part had originally been set for the great Italian tenor Fiorella Lahernia, but he got hung up by the immigration authorities at Ellis Island at the last minute and was forced to decline. Escamillo, the bullfighter, will be sung by the promising young American bass, Enrico Vasolino. This is Mr. Vasolino's debut in grand opera, he having come up through the farm system from San Francisco, where he sang first bass with the San Carlo Opera Company the past two seasons. And there you have the principals in tonight's cast, music lovers. And now, down on stage, all is in readiness, as a trumpet blast heralds the raising of the first act curtain. It is Scene 1, Act 1 of Bizet's immortal opera, Carmen. The scene is a street in Seville, Spain, gay with an animated throng. Don Jose, the young soldier, is on guard duty. A cigarette factory lies to the right, and now the factory girls emerge from their place of employment, where they have been undergoing impartial smoking tests conducted by eminent medical authorities. No other opera can make that statement. They are led by the captivating gypsy, Carmen, who throws a rose bush to Don Jose and sings the wildly beautiful aria, Nous avons hanté en affaire. It's the gypsy in my soul. Ah, but now the action grows more frenzied. One of the factory girls, in giving Carmen a light, has set fire to her mustache. This enrages the hot-tempered gypsy, who whips out a stiletto and ventilates her tormentor. Now, a real rhubarb gets underway. It's a great fight, folks, with Carmen ahead on points at the end of the third round. Now the police intervene, and Carmen is dragged off to the Bastille to be guarded by Don Jose. The lovely gypsy beguiles the infatuated soldier, and he permits her to escape when she sings to him the hauntingly lovely aria, He's 4F in the army, but he's 1A in my heart. As she flees to a place of concealment, Don Jose, stricken with remorse at his dereliction of duty, deserts his post to go and join Carmen, to whom he has lost his heart. Act One of Bizet's opera, Carmen, has concluded, music lovers. Don Jose, the impressionable young soldier, has sought out the beauteous Carmen, who has embarked upon a life of crime, smuggling imitation Spanish onions into Barcelona. Their attachment is strong for a while, but the fickle gypsy cannot remain true to any man. And soon she deserts Don Jose for Escamillo, the bullfighter, who is a dashing figure in his draped cape and gored sword. The night the erstwhile lovers part is a stormy one. Stashed away in their hideout, a cave high in the hills, overlooking 400 cases of contraband onions, Jose and Carmen find themselves restless and moody. This career of banditry upon which he has embarked to be near Carmen has begun to prove distasteful to the young soldier. His displeasure offends Carmen, who scornfully bids him return home, while Jose counters with the suggestion that she drop dead, whereupon they quarrel. Now, as if in portent of things to come, Carmen's desertion to Escamillo, the bullfighter, Arturo Spumoni conducts the stirring Toreador song. The impetuous gypsy whips out a deck of cards and consults them to learn of her ultimate fate with Don Jose. She reads there an ominous sign. She and the young soldier will end their lives tragically, it is written in the cards. In the midst of this strange situation, two visitors arrive, Escamillo and Micaela, a peasant girl with a message from Jose's dying mother. Upon reading this sad communication, the unhappy Jose breaks down. And at this point in the opera, there occurs the brief but poignant baritone aria, "You've worked hard all your life for me, mother darling. Now get out and work for yourself." And while Jose is giving this message to Micaela to take back to his mother, Escamillo, the bullfighter, is beating his time with Carmen, wooing the fiery gypsy with the boastful Toreador song, in which he tells her of his prowess in the bull ring. With meat the price it is, Carmen's head is turned when she hears the Toreador paint a vivid picture of chops, steaks, and roasts on the hoof, while Don Jose sits in tearful dejection beside an open case of onions. She and Escamillo slip an egg in his shoe and beat it. And the curtain mercifully comes down on Act Two of tonight's opera, Carmen. Escamillo and Carmen have fled, leaving Don Jose, while the young soldier plots swift and terrible vengeance upon his betrayers. During this second act intermission, while the crowd is filing out to the fruit punch bowl, it is our pleasure to bring you the Round Table of the Air, the opera Round Table of the Air, the feature we mentioned earlier in the broadcast. As is our practice at these discussions of music and the lives of the great composers, we present the noted critic, author, and lecturer, Dr. B. Monkhouse Smith, back by popular demand to answer some of the questions in letters from listeners, and to shed the light of his extensive knowledge on this, the most universal of the seven lively arts. Dr. Smith's many important works on the subject of music include his memorable treatise, Wild Overtures I Have Made, as well as the monumental trilogy, The Monkhouse Papers, in which he discusses in exhausting detail the ramifications of bebop within the framework of our modern culture. Dr. Smith is also noted for his monograph on the ukulele, the publication of which has caused a current revival of interest in that noble instrument. Other titles written by Dr. Smith include The Ocarina and You, Little Known Facts About the Flageolet and Other Short Stories, The Glockenspiel, Its Impact on Our Civilization, The Banjo, Why Is It?, and the tenor saxophone and mental hygiene.
Oh, come, come, sir. Let's get to the questions and answers.
Just a moment, Doctor. I have a couple more. Do oboe players go mad? I married a Russian trombonist. There I stood with my harpsichord.
I haven't all night, you know.
Well, Dr. Smith, it's a pleasure to welcome you back. To have you gracing our round table of the air, as it were.
You said you wanted I should answer some questions?
Yes, yes. A veritable deluge of mail has come in from music lovers in our radio audience, Doctor.
So? Ask me.
Very well. I'll begin with this letter from Mrs. R.G. of Portland, who writes, "In the reprise at the second movement of Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, I wonder at his use of the diminished ninth chord when orthodox usage calls for the reinstatement of the dominant theme."
You know, I've often wondered about that myself.
Have you really, Doctor?
Get on with the next question.
Mrs. J.Z. of Pomona writes, "My favorite composer is Rimsky-Korsakov. I do so enjoy his Song of India, Hymn to the Sun, and Scheherazade. Could you tell me what was the last thing he did?"
He died.
Well, that answers that nicely. And now a letter from Bubbles, Max, and Chloe down at Joe's all-night garage and mortuary, who would like to know, what was the reason Schubert never finished his unfinished symphony? Can you answer that, Dr. Smith?
I'll be only too delightful, Deems. Schubert didn't finish his unfinished symphony because he couldn't make up his mind. He was unable to choose between several alternative endings he had written. Now, it just so happens that I have my music with me tonight, which includes the only series of recordings in existence of the original codas which Franz Schubert wrote for his unfinished symphony, but which were never appended to the work. It's the name Unfinished.
It figures, yes.
Now, when Schubert first composed the Unfinished Symphony, he ended it this way.
Thank you.
Schubert decided that would never do. He'd have to finish his unfinished symphony some other way. He writes in his memoirs, "Man, this whips me." Unable to decide definitely on the matter, Schubert shilly-shallied around for a while, writing first one ending and then another. After months of exhausting work, which led in time to a complete breakdown in his arches, he composed a second ending, which went like this. Strangely enough, Schubert didn't like that either. By this time, beset with doubts, tortured by inner conflicts over his indecision, he writes again in his memoirs, "Man, I've had it." And once again, the great composer put pen to paper and struggled with his problem. At length, he came up with a third attempt to finish the unfinished symphony. Hopefully, he presented it before a packed house at Salzburg late in the summer of 1839. It went like this. Was crazy, but Schubert's unfinished symphony was destined to remain forever unfinished. Assailed by the critics, his final attempt to write a suitable ending for his masterwork met with the failure of his earlier efforts, and small wonder. Listen to it. After that attempt, Schubert writes in his memoirs, "Man, I'm beat. I quit." And so old and broken from his ill-fated attempts to finish the unfinished symphony, and beset with recurring attacks of the vapors, the spirit at last went out of him, and we hear no more from him. He leaves to the world a legacy, the unfinished symphony, a musical monument to his lone character fault, indecision. He couldn't make up his mind.
A fascinating exposé, Dr. Smith. I hope that answers our listeners' question satisfactorily.
I don't care if it does or not.
Thank you, Dr. B. Munkow Smith, for appearing on our Opera Roundtable of the Air tonight. Be careful of the cat on your way out. And now to the third and final act of Georges Bizet's romantic opera, Carmen, music lovers. The audience has returned to their seats, and we're awaiting the appearance of Maestro Arturo Spimoni, who has paused in the wings for a parting shot with Haig and Haig, his collaborators in this new summer opera series. Here comes the maestro now, listing a little from port. He reaches the podium. Now there's the stick in the air for attention. The house lights are dimming once more. And here is the third act overture to Carmen. As the curtain rises on the third act, we see the street outside the Plaza de Toro, site of Escamillo's triumphs in the bullring. Inside, the Toreador is assassinating El Toro, who is destined for the supermarket. Escamillo executes a beautiful pass and clouts the rushing bull with a sheaf of OPS regulations. This stuns the animal, who is not used to controls. Now the bull turns to make another charge, while Escamillo, in turn, executes the three basic maneuvers, a habanera, a savranola, and a rabinowitz, all in rapid succession. At this, the crowd roars, and the bandiero rushes up with a picador, which he hands to Escamillo for the coup de grace. On the third pass, the toreador makes his kill, then stands over the fallen bull and cuts loose with the ear-splitting toreador song, while outside, Carmen pushes forward in the no-ticket line to get inside and see her hero. However, she is intercepted by the jealous Don Jose, who is desperate at losing her to the bullfighter. In a towering rage, he accuses her of being fickle. "You call everybody darlin'," he cries, "but you ain't gonna call me darlin' anymore." The suspense is awful. now the end comes swiftly, opera lovers. In the final scene, Act 3, we hear the impassioned duet between Jose and Carmen outside the Bull Arena, prefacing the tragic ending of their ill-starred love affair. Arturo Spimone conducts as Jose pulls a knife on Carmen and opens up the conversation.
But my lekker, wenn sie es dreiter. Hey, mein Meier, soll der stinken von Kopf.
Hey, mein Carmen, du kennst mir warmen. Heute Mr. Bargen, Ariel Metzier. Der Rostocker von mir gepägerte Katz. Hey, mein Carmen, du bist an mir sehr brie.
Du bist da, Bom.
Ich hab zieh dich um.
Du hast mein ganzes Leben verführt.
Und wenn ich sehe, ein andere Mädel, hey, Carmen geht es mir geschmiert.
Du bist da jung.
So I'm told.
Euch mir alle, oi.
Oh, I'm so happy, du alte Schaffe. I am strictly your lover, boy. Oi, Carmen, Zatzkele, bei mir brennt dieser Hitz. Oh, one look on you und ich schwitz.
Meier, du bist zu alt. Sei nicht knaser. Verspritzer geht mit kaltem Wasser.
Audience is on its feet now. Wave after wave of applause is welling up for Maestro Arturo Spimone and the cast of thousands who tonight have presented the first in our new summer opera series, Georges Bizet's Carmen. This has been a public service presentation to culture-conscious Californians from KECA's Bargain Basement Concert Hall of the Air, a weekly feature at this same hour. We invite you to be with us again next time when we'll look through the opera glass at another great opera. Now, this is your host and annotator, Deems Anderson, thanking you on behalf of the staff and management for joining us this evening. Transcribed and recorded, Through the Opera Glass is written on a typewriter, directed by Frank Morris. Good night, and good music.